the essential podcast for educators in the UK. Made by teachers, for teachers.
Hello and welcome to Homework Podcast. It's been a while, gentlemen. Things have changed. Our numbers have grown by one. Although he hasn't actually, we haven't even been introduced yet, Sam. He's through
there. I've had a lucky...
You had a couple?
I've had a visit already, mate. Feed.
There you go.
Uncle Sam.
I was a natural.
He looks so chuffed with himself. So, David, how is fatherhood?
Oh, life's great. Timing was pretty close to going back to school, so it's been a busy few weeks. I had a new job, new school, new baby in the last 2 weeks, so catching up on a little bit of sleep. But
he's looking
loving life.
Pretty bleary eyed, but he is smiling like the Cheshire Cat at the same time.
Absolutely.
What about you, Ben? Any changes in your life?
No,
still the same old Ben.
Well, more importantly, gents, you've obviously both moved schools as well. So let's hear that. New roles. Believe it or not, David somehow managed to be maths lead. No one's quite sure how that happened. And Sam, have you moved school?
Moved school. So after 5 years, left my old school, taking on the role of phase leader for the first time, which is quite exciting. So I'm phase leader for year 6, 5, and 4. Year 6 teacher. And PE leader again, so still getting kids out, taking part in PE.
Loves a bit of PE.
Always in a tracksuit.
Yeah, and yeah, nice, exciting. I've loved it so far. I've done a week, so 3 days with the children, 2 days with the staff,
and the other people in the school.
It's taken a while, but yeah, no, really good stuff. Thank you. I'm enjoying it.
And David, yeah, how's maths treating you?
Oh, maths. Well, I've done a bit of maths. We've had 2 days, 2 days with the kids. But I've joined a school that opened in 2016, so new school. I'm teaching year 3 for the first time, and it's the first time they've had year 3, so they're going up into Key Stage 2. Interesting for me, it's a one form entry. I haven't done that before, so really excited by that, but we'll come with some challenges, I'm sure. Leading maths and still pretty involved in reading in a slightly different capacity to my old school. Yeah. What about you, Ben? Any change? You've got Reading Rocks coming to your school.
Reading Rocks? I was just thinking about it. Yeah, there. If you haven't got your ticket yet, gents, have you listened in? Look at them squirm.
I went last year.
It'll still be different, though.
Yeah. No, as in I
thought my free one was in the post.
Your free one? I don't know. Well, maybe that's a shout out. Can the Homework Podcast crew get. I mean, I'm already going to be there because it's at my school.
Yeah, that's true. Seems fair.
Trying to arrange catering this week. So
Ben's doing the car park.
That's it. Yeah, but no, that'd be good.
On your classroom displays.
Literally, I said to someone during the summer holidays, I was like, oh, God, yeah, I need to make sure that the displays are tip top because there'll be a.
Especially a reading display. You got something in mind?
No. Did you know, as bad as it is, that's not as bad. I don't actually have a reading display. I have a working wall.
Working wall.
It's a wall of work.
Is it filled yet?
It's filled with this week's work. Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah. Chapter analysis. Who let the gods out? Woot, Mass Evans. Hiya. You're on holiday at the moment. Have fun. It's all good. It's all good. New class. Different challenges. Different opportunities.
Which year group, Ben?
Still in 5. Can't get rid of me.
How long have you done 5? Like 3 years now?
This will be my fourth, yeah.
Fourth, yeah.
I think it's my 9th or 10th year of teaching.
Makes
me feel old.
Yeah, that's good.
I should be retiring by
testimonial.
Consultancy, I think.
That's it. That's it. I'll withdraw from teaching and start telling everyone.
If this podcast goes well, you never know.
So, gents, I mean, it was obviously we were supposed to be recording a few weeks ago, and then selfishly David had a small event in his life, so we had to delay. But I mean, the kind of vibe from sort of Twitter when we were due to record was kind of everything that sort of we've discussed, I think, perhaps privately before, which is the benefits, but also some of the sort of nastier areas of Twitter and kind of how, as a teacher, it can be. I certainly think for people that aren't particularly confident or perhaps early in their careers, they can be concerned about sort of voicing opinions or making statements or even just trying to help someone for fear of kind of being, I don't know, lambasted and shot down and mocked and so basically I think that's kind of today's podcast is the highs and lows, unfortunately, of edgy Twitter and how we see it.
Yeah, I think Ben's referring to a period of time about 3 or 4 weeks ago, I'd say. Since then, on a personal level, I've taken a bit of a step back from Twitter, mainly because I've got other priorities in life at the moment. But around that time, I think there was quite a nasty vibe on Twitter. There was lots of talk about lists of people to follow, lots of talk about ideas for the classroom. And I got the impression that there's a lot of people sitting around at home in the summer holidays with not too much to do, finding entertainment in picking fights over sort of petty squabbles. Now, for me, Twitter has lots of highs and lots of lows, and I think on reflection, it does, you know, the positives do outweigh the negatives, and I think particularly in term time, there is there's plenty to gain from it. But I think this summer, more so than last summer, there was certainly some sour-tasting moments that leave you sort of sitting there wondering if it is all worthwhile.
I think with Twitter, I think the nature of it is that you have an option, and your option is to engage, and that could well be just you sharing what you're doing, or it could also be you taking a chance to respond to people who are putting out ideas, maybe something they put up in their classroom, maybe something they're working on. But other people obviously stay well out, and I think it does also depend on maybe your school stance on teacher use of Twitter. I know, like, since I've started my new school, they've quite actively voiced their opinion on us as a member of staff.
Oh, really?
As to, is it right for us to be on social media? And I think Facebook primarily was the first sort of port of call, and it was nothing to do with sort of educational side of Facebook, but more about personal stuff, which we all know about. But I think now, I think they sort of came up to me and said, oh, we understand you're on Twitter.
Yeah, you're a big deal.
Not compared to you two, but but of my school, I think I'm more engaged than some, and I think they were a bit concerned that it could end us in some trouble, and I think it's a tricky time on Twitter.
It is. I think, I mean, we've sort of discussed it. I think it's the fact that there's it's easy for people to sort of make claims, to make statements, to say things. I mean, let's be frank about it. Everyone knows what we're talking about. We, the three of us, were called white supremacists because we happened to host the podcast where we all happen to be white. We come from a part of the country that is predominantly white. We're in an industry that is predominantly white. There's no kind of blatant racism there. We just happen to be three blokes who were in a similar area that we're all absolutely amazing at podcasting.
Yeah, it's just a God-given gift.
And that's the thing, that if that was in the street or if that was in the workplace, then I would be taking that to my line manager as a serious grievance, and I think there would be a disciplinary procedure there. But because it's on Twitter, despite the fact that that came from another teaching professional who's appeared on the BBC, that was just okay, and there wasn't a collective kind of outpouring from the rest of Edgy Twitter of you can't say that. Before we came on air, we were discussing that we're not alone in that. There are two or three, I would say, people, teachers out there that are regularly making heavily racist statements or heavily prejudiced statements against other teachers based on class or creed, and that's just allowed. And I think that if anything, if I was a school leader, like, I would want to know if my teachers were making comments and statements like that. And I know we were discussing a certain person who has complained to people's schools before about conduct online, and I personally would never do that because I actually think, what's the point? Like, if that person needs to make that kind of statement, then that says more about them than me.
Yeah, I guess that's the beast that is social media nowadays, is that there's this sort of freedom of speech right, and people are able to sort of shoot from the hip and say what they like. And I think, I mean, the most recent situation that jumps out to me, and he won't mind me saying, because we've had lots of conversations about it, is Tom Rogers producing his list of educators to follow. Now, Tom Rogers is, and he will again not mind me saying, he's a character that is happy to he's happy to divide opinion. He's happy to share his opinions, and they're not always opinions that everyone will agree with, and he's cool with that. Tom put loads and loads of time into creating a list of educators to follow. I was someone he asked for suggestions for that list, and I know
that's what you thought the message was going to be, wasn't it? Hi, Dave, I'm making a list of really influential educators. I was just wondering if David's little heart got a little bit faster.
Oh my God.
And, could you have any recommendations, Dave?
Didn't say us, I'm pretty Ben.
Pretty gutted not to make it onto the list, I must say. But no.
Come on, Tom.
Tom put time and effort into that list and gauged opinion from loads and loads of people. Pops this list out, and next thing he knows, he's being absolutely berated as some sort of bigoting racist. It is laughable. Now, the bloke is, you know, he then spends the next 2 weeks of his life having to trawl through threads, screenshotting things like claims and accusations, and he's having his professionalism, his personality, his just himself, just absolutely scrutinised and berated for creating a list of educators, which, if you actually whittle it down, was fairly diverse. And I don't think many people would criticise the selections at all.
There was probably a higher percentage of non-white, if we want to use the term, people on that list than there are percentage of educators in the UK, if you look at it like that.
Oh, and
not to mention, this is a man who's forged most of his career choosing to work internationally. In various different countries. I mean, I know that for me was the most unpleasant period of Twitter that I had ever seen, and it was ridiculous. And this idea of now that if anything, like, I mean, obviously I'm heavily into reading. If I were to kind of produce a list of 20 books that I think every child should have read by the time they finish primary school, I am going to be sat there thinking, oh gosh, have I got a black author? Have I got a Muslim main character? Have I got a refugee? Yeah. Or have I got a child in a wheelchair? Have I got a transgender child? Like, and that to me is perhaps a microcosm of society that is abjectly wrong.
And we're all pro-diversity and inclusion, but we're also pro-common sense, and if you want to produce a list that you think is going to be useful, it doesn't need to be much more than that.
If you were in Kuala Lumpur and you were producing a list of the most sort of influential educators in the Far East, would someone be sat down saying, hang on a minute, I need to make sure I've got an American and I've got is this happening everywhere? I don't think
it's the same very niche group of people that are calling it out, but and calling out a lot of things in the loudest.
And what is happening, like, where, I mean, to be fair to Tom, a lot of people did rally around behind him. But as you say, like, I put out a couple of tweets and then I move on. Tom's got to deal with it for weeks and weeks and weeks. And
it was ruining his life for a short period of time. I think it really was.
Well, he said he wished he'd never bothered doing it.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean about, if you're saying to a 21-year-old or an 18-year-old that's starting their training, like, get involved with Edgy Twitter, if I was 18 and seen that, I'd have thought,
Stay well away. What on earth
is the point? You've got a guy here with 20,000 followers. Yeah. Or whatever he's got, who has spent hours producing a 40-person list of who to follow, and he's getting shot down because it's not diverse enough. What am I at 18 years old or 20 years old or whatever? What am I going to contribute? What does that say to me?
I'm sure it's the same. Obviously, we're talking about education and teachers on Twitter, but I'm sure that there is a correlation, I have no doubt, between any sort of celebrity of any industry. The more followers they get, the more open they are to criticism, the more open they are to feedback, and it will probably be negative more than positive. I think if you're talking, Ben, about sort of NQTs getting involved in, and that is primarily why I think Tom made this list in the first place. He's trying to be helpful. He's put out a list at that time of year where people who are entering the profession are thinking about, oh, where can I get ideas from?
Yeah.
Like, we've all done it. Yeah. And I think, unfortunately, it's just coming to a point, as you mentioned, David, the freedom of speech has gone so far the other way now that no one's scared to say anything either. That keyboard warrior mentality, and you're putting yourself in a situation where actually, what's the comeuppance? Who really is going to hold you to account for what you've said, what you've done?
And we've all made mistakes, and we've all tweeted in the heat of the moment. I know that I've read some of David's threads before, and he's even said to me afterwards, like, "Oh, it just pissed me off." But
it's hard not to get involved, though.
But then you have to accept it. And I mean, I've tweeted and deleted it straight away because you kind of think,
get out of your system.
What's the point? Like, what is genuine? How are we? What are we trying to achieve with this incredible creation and this incredible community of a quarter of a million teachers, 100,000 teachers?
But there is this thing, isn't there? If it is life, like Sam says, people with bigger followings, people with sort of more status, I guess, in terms of just being known, they do sort of bring themselves upon more criticism. But lists of followers on Facebook and Twitter, it's a weekly thing. There's this, Twitter Friday follow.
FFA,
now, people are doing that every single Friday, or most days of the week. Nobody's, to my knowledge, trawling through their list, checking the diversity of followers there. Because people think, actually, I'll recommend that person to follow because they might be worth a follow, not because of anything else. Now, some of the criticism, I think, is hugely unwarranted.
I mean, that kind of leads us on to kind of the next point, and it's something that I know I've read a lot about more and more over the last few months, and that's cliques on Twitter. So I would say that I do I would say I see that almost as much as kind of stuff, like comments that I think, oh God, why have you said that? Because, but prime example, I think, you look at the incredible Primary Rocks, yeah? So they pose out their questions, etc. Now, you can have someone with 25 followers that makes a statement and it doesn't get liked or it doesn't get shared or whatever. Mm. And then someone with sort of... And they use the hashtag, so everyone's seen it.
Yeah.
And then someone with 5,000, 10,000, 15,000 followers who's a name or a face or whatever, who makes an almost identical statement, and people fall over themselves
they
to say
it.
How incredible it is and how it's groundbreaking. And I do feel for people at the start of kind of their journey into Twitter or the start of their trying to join in with stuff, because there's been a couple of people recently that I've seen that have said, like, oh, I wonder if anybody actually sees my tweets because no one ever responds. And that makes
weird,
people stop.
It?
And it's the circle, isn't it? Because if no one's seeing it, you think, what's the point? And then you just give up. And I do think that there are, like, those follow Fridays or whatever, it's often the same 10, 15 people that, and don't get me wrong, like, a lot of them are very good, they're good people. I'm not saying that there's nothing that they shouldn't be followed. I'm not saying that
it's
they shouldn't.
It's just kind of like, not a vicious circle, but it's a cycle, isn't it?
And you could argue that the three of us are part of that.
We crop up into that quite a lot.
I'm not saying for a minute that we're sort of holier than thou or anything else, but I do think you do sometimes see...
That's again just very like briefly hopping back to the list or other lists. That's why the lists are quite useful, because actually looking at that list Tom Rogers produced, there was people on there without 10,000 followers. There was people that were actually genuinely chosen for the content that they can provide. I can provide half decent content. However, I often get asked, like, I've got, I don't know, like 13,000 followers. I'll often get asked questions which I'm simply not qualified to give answers for, but people think that I am in a good position to do that because I've got quite a few followers.
People associate.
Now, that's where these lists are useful, and people are absolutely like stupid to criticise them and not use them when they're there.
Yeah, there's a big like association, I think, and I was 100% guilty of this when I started getting on Twitter. David was on there before me, and he was sort of chatting through his colleagues face to face about like people he's spoken to and ideas he's been sort of shared. But I, when I initially started, I was like, I'm not sure this is for me, because I was like looking at it and just like, you see the people with like 5k, 10k, and you see that K even next to the numbers instead of the digits.
Yeah.
And like, you think, God, they must be really good teachers.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, none of us have seen any of these people in classrooms.
No, we haven't.
Yeah. David's seen me.
I've seen Ben. Yeah.
And you're still here.
It was groundbreaking.
Oh, it's groundbreaking. The Hulk display.
But I think.
Still there. You'll see that at Reading Ross, the Incredible Hulk.
But I think there's this notion that if you're on there and you've got loads of followers, you must be a brilliant teacher. And I'm sure nearly all of them must be.
Yeah.
But I think
it's just
like these NQTs are just looking at people going, wow, what can I do to be like them?
And part of the problem is, I think that, like, so if an NQT or whatever, or someone with not many followers shares a great idea, and a more well-known person, like, great, they applaud it, they share it, and like share it as this person's idea. Part of the problem, I think, with Twitter is that people don't then go and follow the person whose idea it was. They either follow the person the with the huge following who shared it, or they just like it and they move on.
Yeah.
And it's a weird kind of, like, for example, so when I produced the first reading review document for my school, that was probably... I mean, that was like my first big,
my first number one.
No, but for me, that was massive. That was shared like 1,000 times.
It's like Damien Rice Cannonball, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. That was it. So, but I don't actually think my follower numbers particularly increased, because it's an idea, it's a resource that people wanted to use, and that's great. That's what Twitter's about. Yeah. But it's that kind of made me think about, what if so many people are liking it, so many people are sharing it, so many people are asking for a copy, but they're not following, what's kind of point? And perhaps that's the next question, I guess. What is the point? Why do we, what is, if you had to summarize in a sentence, what is the point of using edgy Twitter? Why do we bother? Why do we, certainly myself and David, why do we invest so much time into it?
For me, like, I've had this conversation with quite a few people, and for me, it falls into two categories. Like, I think throughout the school year, predominantly in the autumn and spring term, if you log on to Twitter enough, you will catch some really decent ideas for the classroom. In amongst some, you know, razzmatazz and nonsense, but there is some really good stuff there. For me, I really do love the sort of like book community on Twitter. Now, that's not always like the teacher book community, but I really love the interaction with authors. I really love the like, I like following a lot of like publishers, Twitters. I'm in a very fortunate position where I have had some good communication with authors and publishers. I'm fortunate enough to receive quite a few free books and stuff.
I don't share that at all.
But for me, that is a perk. I love reading. I love access to pre-released books. I love talking to authors, and I do really enjoy sharing those with teachers. But what I cannot abide is these sort of petty squabbles, and I try to steer clear of them. Now and then I'll get dragged into them, but the teaching aspect of it does sort of wane for a good part of the year. I think that, as I say, autumn term, spring term, when people perhaps have a bit less time to sit there and squabble and a bit more time to focus on the classroom, you do pick up some good stuff, but there are times where you do wonder, why am I on Twitter? What am I listening to people talking about, baking and sun cream? And like, why don't I actually get off and live my own life rather than living it through a screen sometimes?
I think there's a temptation where it can become all-consuming. And I think initially when I started it, for me the ideas behind what people were putting on there was why I wanted to follow people. I was seeing some really cool things. I was probably, maybe in QT plus one when I joined Twitter.
It's the newly termed recently qualified teacher.
The RQT. When did that become a thing? New phenomenon. But I think since that's happened, like, I probably see less and less ideas that actually have sort of inspired me, because maybe that's just because of my own confidence in the classroom. I don't feel necessarily the need to...
A lot of the ideas are just regurgitated as well.
Yeah, regurgitated ideas. But I think I've tried things actually in hindsight. I go, that just doesn't work for me. And that doesn't mean it's a bad idea. For me personally, though, I'd say in the last 6 months, the biggest change in my involvement is that, and I'm not by any means following, don't have as many followers as you two, but I've got like 6,000, I think. But I felt like all of a sudden when I was seeing that, I was like, oh, okay. I felt a bit of pressure. I've got this many people following me, therefore, I don't know, compared to David with his above 10, like, I feel like I need to have an output that's quite high. Not as high as him, but I need to keep up an output the whole time. And that's
I feel weird. The same though. You do feel like I've spent 2 weeks not really tweeting, so I've had far more important things to do. I do kind of feel, shit, I've got lots of followers. Maybe I should be like actively putting stuff out. Like, I feel a bit of a responsibility.
Yeah, and it's given me. Stupid, I honestly, genuinely think it's like some sort of social media anxiety. Because
it is hard.
It's tricky.
I do see what you mean. I mean, for me, it's definitely about the ideas. I mean, Emily Weston has some fantastic ideas. Like, she's got a similar number of followers to Dave. Like, I adapted one of her lessons.
It's about the shoes.
I adapted that for an interview lesson. Like, and that's nice. That
is a good idea.
Like Sophie B, she produces all this SATs analysis stuff that's incredible. It saves people.
That's what I love about Twitter.
That's amazing. That effort she puts in.
But I would agree with you that, like, it's, I mean, like, David talking about kind of what people tweet about. And people tweet what the hell you want.
It's free
choice. But I would say that I've unfollowed loads of people recently because of the stuff that they're talking about Brexit. The comments that people are sharing about different people. The amount of people that are saying, oh, our children in school wouldn't behave like this, and then they're sharing stuff or saying stuff about both sides of the debate that is really just bang out of order, and I don't want to read that. That's not what I'm there for, and that's really sad, because that means that I'm then not following their educational stuff. But to be honest, I don't, it sounds a bit lame, but I don't want that negativity in my life. I bantered about muting the words Bake Off. People want to chat about it, that's great, and I'm not going to tell them not to. Like, what, it's banter, I'm joking in that regard, but it is that fine line. I've always insisted on keeping my Twitter a professional Twitter. I do share the occasional bits and pieces about football because it's really hard to decide kind of where I would find it very difficult to know how to behave if I was making it a professional and very much a personal account, because anyone can follow you. Your parents can quite easily be following you, and you'd have. I mean, certainly if you're a David and you've got 15,000 followers, you could have kids in your class following you, and you wouldn't.
I think this is where it. Like, I totally agree, and it's thoughts that I've had myself. But I think that's where you have to. You just have to have a bit of a think about, like, what sort of content you are actually going to... And it sounds so, like, 21st century, doesn't it? What content you're putting out there. But I'd say for myself, like, it is, I'd say, a professional account. However, I am happy to share some personal aspects, but it is very much, like, censored in terms of what I would share. So, like, people know that I'm having, or I'm having a baby, I do feel obliged and very happy to share a few pictures of me and the baby.
So can I ask
stuff
I,
like that? But
can I ask then? Yeah. So did you discuss that with your missus? Like, was that an actual?
She knows.
Was that a conversation? And that always interests me. Was that a conversation of, do we want? Are we okay with this?
Yeah.
Or was it a kind of? Oh well, as Sam's just said, I've got 15,000 followers. They know that I'm expecting a baby.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like I owe it to them that they would want to see it.
They'll be asking questions.
You know, weird thing.
We spoke generally about like whether we were going to put pictures of babies online, whether we do it on Facebook, whether she would have an issue with me doing it on Twitter, etc. And there's certain aspects of like little one's life I certainly wouldn't want publicised over. The internet. I think myself holding a very small little baby, I think something we're both very happy to do.
They all look the same anyway.
They change every day, mate. But I think that's it. Whether I want to, with my Twitter personally, I want it to feel a little bit real to the people following it. I want it to seem
human,
like, I want it to be human. Now, are there things that I believe academically, educationally, politically that I don't say on Twitter? Yeah, definitely. So I don't say them because it's not something I would feel that is sensible to say. But I do say a lot. I'd say I'm 90% real on Twitter, and I think to keep it real, I do like to share a bit of myself with it because I think it makes me a human being, and I think it
more
adds
relatable,
something to those who follow.
Have you ever tweeted something, both of you, and then deleted it, thinking if a parent or a head teacher, senior leadership or whatever, if someone saw that, they would perhaps be uncomfortable?
Within reason. So I don't think I've ever put anything online that I'd say is detrimental. I don't think I live like a very sort of edgy life. What I may have done is take a picture of myself out at dinner on holiday and there might have been a glass of wine and I might have thought twice and thought, should I put a picture of myself with a glass of wine on Twitter? And it's not that I think there would be any backlash from me having a glass of wine. It's just, I think, is it really worth potentially having to have a conversation over a glass of wine?
I get exactly what you're saying. It's sad. I think it's the world we live in. I've had moments, not so much in the last couple of years, but early on in my teaching career, where like my mates because it was based on my own personal Twitter that I then made an education Twitter. I didn't make a new one. So I had my mates...
Dragged all your followers.
He wanted those 250.
Just very quickly, I was chatting to a girl over Twitter and about reading booklets. And she was... And I said to her, God, you've got like 19,000 followers. And she honestly said like, oh, it's really... if you're listening, then good girl. Oh, yes. But she said something like, I was really into Coldplay or I was really into emo music when I was growing up.
Oh, that's
and, and I just changed it to a Twitter account. So I was like, so sorry, you've got like 18,000 followers and 17 and a half of them are waiting for you to go back to talking about My Chemical Romance.
Wait till we change our Twitter.
Absolutely. Anyway, sorry, carry on.
No, it was more just like, I had to sort of educate my friends as to sort of almost their etiquette because initially when I was I think a trainee maybe, they were putting things out and I was like, you have to delete that because they've pulled me into a tweet which in the grand scheme of things is absolutely fine.
Yeah.
It wasn't anything derogatory, it wasn't anything putting me in a vulnerable position, but it's just you have to look a certain way and have a feel. And I think now you asked had I tweeted anything that's maybe instantly then been deleted because I thought, oh, maybe I shouldn't have done that. No. I actually haven't. What I have had though is I've had people, so my previous head teacher asked me to remove something, which I spoke to him quite adamantly about. I said, I don't think there's anything wrong with that tweet.
Can we ask what it was?
Yeah, it was literally just sort of raising the issue that I was a year 6 teacher at the time and I'd sort of sent off many, many children to this very large secondary school nearby and I went to visit them in the first term afterwards about the transition, and I just mentioned how it was really good that they supported the transition of those children from 6 to 7, and he was very adamant that that made us look like the children were vulnerable
and
it was just nothing like that. But he asked me to delete it, so I did. And then more recently I was on a middle leader training course and a statistic was thrown out there by the deliverer of the course, and I tweeted it, and the statistic was along the lines of something about if a child is in a sort of educational set when they're very young, I think even it was almost key stage one level, they're graded on, they're grouped as like a lower ability child, 90% of them don't get out of it when they
leave
school.
Tweet,
transpires that whoever the government body that initially put it out there. They denied it, and I had the DfE emailing me saying you need to delete this. We never claimed to have said it. Blah blah.
And that was quite.
I was like, that made me feel quite sick because obviously, as a teacher, you don't want the DfE thinking you're someone that's smirching the industry. It's dangerous.
It's a strange one. Like thinking about I was just thinking as you said, as you were talking there, that there's two things. Firstly, I personally, whenever I share an image of the children in my class, I always blur out their faces, blur out names, etc. And I find it surprising the number of teachers that don't.
Yeah.
And I'm not for a second suggesting that they haven't asked for permission. But if I was a parent, I'm not entirely sure I'd be cool with that because you've got no idea.
Can I ask? You put pictures out there, blurring them or however you do it. Your school are cool with that?
My head teacher and my deputy follow me and they've never...
Yeah, fine, that's good.
Yeah, I'm talking like if we're doing a particular activity, like all you can see is the colour of their jumper kind of thing.
Yeah.
And if any parent ever approached me or said that they were unhappy about that, then obviously I wouldn't do it. I mean, but on the same merit, I mean, we have a very popular school Twitter feed. Some of my colleagues then retweet pictures of that. But the other thing that I was thinking was someone like, say, Chris Dyson, who's got a massive following and rightly so has done absolutely incredible things in an incredibly tough school or an incredibly tough area. I kind of like the fact that you still see a bit more about his family. I like the fact that he tweets on a Saturday morning when he's standing in the pissing rain, always rains like
that, watching
his kid play football.
Or on holiday, doing that sort of routine in the swimming pool.
I think in that regard, I do like that amount of sharing because I kind of feel, and I'm sure a lot of people kind of feel, excuse me, that although I don't actually know Chris and I've never met him, we've had the occasional chat online, and I do follow very closely what he shares, and I do follow very closely what he says, and I do like the fact that I kind of feel like I kind of know him, despite the fact he would walk past me in the street and probably wouldn't know who I am.
Yeah.
It's because you've got that hideously flattering profile picture, Ben.
Oh, you know. I mean, this is rich. This is rich coming from the guy who changes his picture every 3 weeks. I also noticed Dave's new lanyard.
Oh yes,
it's the
2017.
He's
clinging on to those strands of hair.
It's 2017 model.
When he went and got that professional photo taken, that was his original profile picture on Twitter. And it's nice. And I know that kind of I'm not going to go into names because I don't think we should. But there are two particular people. In the last sort of year, one of them has suffered a sort of a very personal bereavement, and I understand why they wanted to share that, and it was heartbreaking reading what they wrote about it, and again, not knowing the person, but being able to feel their pain through what they had written, and if that gave them some sort of comfort from this invisible friendship community, then all power to them. And the second person who had also suffered a bereavement, who is now in a new relationship, and I think that, and also with someone that she met, as far as I'm aware, through Twitter, that's amazing.
It's cool.
But it's a weird kind of mixture, isn't it? I do think people should just be able to do what they want, how they want.
I think so.
But it'd be nice if
people didn't feel the need to have to criticise, like just for the sake of criticising. And I think there's a fine line on Twitter between challenging opinion and spitefully criticising for the sake of it. Another thing for whilst you're on this topic, which I personally think is quite important and relevant on Twitter. I know Sam and I have had conversations about this recently. Having both moved schools, obviously you move schools and you get used to different ways of doing things, which is great. I think there is a danger on Twitter with all of the fresh ideas to do with workload, work-life balance and this sort of thing. I think there is a danger of people looking at everything every school is doing. Mm-hmm. And thinking that their school is perhaps worse than it actually is.
Yeah.
So should we have no marking, no planning, no observations, no performance management? Should we get in at 9, leave at 3? Do you know what I mean? It's like, I think people see all of the ideals that some schools do on Twitter, and probably those schools aren't actually exactly like that in reality. And then they probably think their school, oh my God, it's terrible. Do I need to leave? Is teaching for me? And yes, there are absolutely challenges within teaching. However, I do think Twitter can portray a slightly fake image of what an ideal school is. Yeah. Exactly. And I do think that's quite dangerous for people. I know we've certainly sat there and talked about, oh, this school does this.
I think it puts pressure on. And I think it's just the way it works is that we are always going to make comparisons between ourselves and our classes and our classrooms with everyone else that we see. And I think that is okay because you can draw upon the expertise of others. But I think also there can be a negative side to that, and you can feel inferior to others. You can feel like you're stuck in a situation which is never going to change. I think, like, having just listened to the two of you speak and my own thoughts throughout this podcast, I think more than anything, the biggest shame of particularly the recent events where people have been lambasted and people have been criticised is we are a community that should stick together.
Yeah.
Like, we're in an incredibly turbulent time in this country, and when you've got, you said, what, 250,000 teachers on Twitter?
It's a big figure.
We've got a tricky job to do at times, and I think, like, it's just such a shame that people unfortunately use their energy to criticise as opposed to their energy to build people up. And we don't want to lose teachers, I have no idea if there's any data on this or figures, or even
too
if
too careful the DfE.
The DfE are after.
I'm not going to tweet out.
Sam, it's like,
I'm not going to tweet it. I'm just going to put it on a podcast.
I don't mind saying it. I would imagine there will be teachers out there, and it may be literally one or two, but who have been really, really affected by just the pressures of social media and the pressures of Twitter, and have found it really tough.
Yeah.
And like that, I'm not saying they cite it as a reason for leaving the profession, but I reckon it can be a factor.
I mean, before this year started, there were probably, I don't know, I probably saw a dozen people saying, like, right, this year I'm not going to get to school before 8 and I'm going to leave by 5 every day, and I'm not working in the evenings, and I'm not working in the weekends, and I'm not working in my lunch break. And instantly, and this is part of the problem, is instantly I read it and thought, well, that's bollocks. Like, you can't do the job like that. So and went to reply saying, well, how on earth are you going to do that? Like, you can't, like, you either, realistically, I would argue, you either get in early or you stay late.
Yeah.
Like,
well, that's, and you work through lunch.
And you do bits and pieces here and there. Like, just to blanketly say, I'm going to leave by 5 every day. Well, my staff meetings finish at 5, so by the time, even if I went straight to my classroom, got my stuff and left, I'm still, do you see what I mean?
That's when
part of the reason why I was like, oh, well, that's not, like, I went to time, oh, well, that's ridiculous, how are you going to do that? It's jealousy.
Maybe they've got a situation where they can't do that.
Like Emily Weston saying, like, yesterday was the first Friday afternoon she's ever worked because her school always finished. Her previous school finished at 1 o'clock on a Friday.
Crazy.
And I remember saying to her, "Oh, that's ridiculous! Like, how can you do that?" And essentially, it's jealousy, and that's it.
I think that's the motive for most criticism online, isn't it? Jealousy in some way. Someone writes a list. Someone makes a nice blog.
Absolutely.
Why are you sitting there and criticising it? I want it. I wish I'd written it. Yeah. Ridiculous. Get a life.
Yeah, and that's, and that does come back to, to sort of finish off, it does come back to getting credit for ideas and stuff. Mm. And this idea that, like, and I do, and that does annoy me when you kind of feel like someone, you've done something and someone else does it pretty much identical and then says that it was their idea, or that they don't credit you in this. And I know that this has upset a lot of people, or someone, like, it's no different in my opinion to someone that downloads a resource and tries to sell it on TES as their own idea.
Do you know what I mean? It's no different either to you doing something in your classroom at your school, and all of a sudden someone else in your school is doing it, and you're like, "How do you?"
And they present it as theirs.
It does. Yeah. That's happened
and
to
it
me
does.
Before.
Yeah, and I think that there's a certain kind of reading thing on Twitter at the moment that a lot of people have included in their displays.
You've done that, haven't you, in your classroom?
I haven't done that. No. And I would love to know who the first. Like, it's personally, it's not for me. That's personal choice. I wouldn't have it up in my classroom, but lots of people love it, and if they love it, then all power to them. But someone came up with that idea at some point originally, and we're not getting paid for it, but there should be some level of kind of pat on the back or kind of I have no problem when I shared my lesson about that, where similar to Emily's shoe lesson, where it was artifacts and stuff. I shared it on Twitter, it got quite a bit of traction, but I made sure that as soon as I shared it, I said that it was an adaptation of her original
idea.
It's
so odd, isn't it? Like, yeah. Every couple of weeks, I get all this widespread praise about this angles lesson where you're masking tape on tables. You've probably seen this.
Everyone does it, yeah.
Everyone does it. But I'm a great maths mind, but I don't think I created that. And
I don't actually know where it came from. That was in books years ago.
But I get like all these like congratulatory tweets, this praise, thanking me for this idea, this innovation. And I'm just like, I've not created it. I do accept
that there are occasions where the person that has adapted it themselves doesn't actually know who to credit.
I could not tell you where.
So like there are loads of reading review documents and reading newsletters out now. And to be honest, loads of people doing it probably saw the 10th share. And yeah. I'm not saying that everyone should always be sort of congratulating everyone every week for something, but it just I think it comes back to what I was saying. If you have very few followers or you're very timid about your presence on social media, you do share something and someone else takes it and takes a load of sort of praise for it. I feel pretty crap, and I feel like what is the point?
I think the other thing that just to mention, it's very obvious to everyone, is it's really important to just bookmark things on Twitter. Like if you see a resource that's really good,
use screenshot
or use that bookmark button, because I do it without thinking a lot of the time, and then now and then I'll go and have a look at the tweets I've bookmarked. And that's where I'll find those people that have originally created that resource, and then make sure you follow them, because
you can paper trail it that way.
You really can. And I think bookmarking things that you might not need now but need later, and it sounds so obvious, but so many people have been, oh, is there, I didn't even know that button exists, I didn't even know you could
something I've done in the past. I don't do it at the moment, but that may be just because I'm feeling more confident in my own practice, I guess. But if
Sam,
you find someone,
so Sam feels so confident.
Sam is glowing.
He's glowing, he looks so good.
Lent back, you know, the hair's all good, like
just chilled
got
out.
A nice Under Armour jacket on, you know, the sun is shining, life is good in
life is good for me.
DF
All I was going to say was, if you find someone like... and
like you?
Not me.
That's really
not
confident.
Not me. Ignore these two clowns. And I'm about to say something. Don't ever do these two. But if you find someone that you think actually does put out there some great ideas, or even just shares other people's great ideas and credits them, then you can also get notifications on what they post. So if, for example, you were massively into what we've mentioned, Tom Rogers, for example, you could get notifications to when he tweets. Equally, you could have it someone who isn't big time, but someone who just generally does put out some cool things. You can then find out when they put them on there, and you could be straight away involved in what they've done. I mean, I did that when David was sort of starting the reading, sort of our old school. What did you say?
Revolution.
Our old school. He did do a good job reading, and then I started getting notifications.
They made him do maths at the end. Yeah.
If you want, there is an option to get notifications on people's. Well, it's a nice idea.
I think that,
last thing, do not be afraid to block and mute people on Twitter that annoy you, insult you, or criticise you, because it is not worth feeling upset or angry about 100%. It. Just block them. It doesn't matter if you're missing out on threads they're in.
You'll see it when someone else shares something anyway.
Just do not worry
about
blocking
people. Take the plunge
as well.
Get on it, and if you don't like something about it, you just have the power to change it.
Just
have a go.
What an uplifting...
With a bit of confidence.
Yeah.
Like me.
In your own practice. Well, thank you very much for listening. As always, we would love to hear your thoughts and opinions on what's probably our most controversial pod yet.
I think so.
But we hope you've enjoyed it, and we hope you enjoy your weekend, and we'll see you all soon.
Thanks, guys.
See you later, guys.
For much more content exclusively for teachers by teachers, visit homeworkmagazine.co.uk. Also, please follow us on social media at homework_magazine and at homework_podcast. Homework Podcast is brought to you by Iguanas Producciones.